Hey, everybody, what's up? My name is Seth Perler. Welcome back to TFOS, the Executive Function Online Summit. I'm really glad you're here. And we're here today in this session with Jeff Copper. Jeff Copper is an attention coach and an expert on attention issues, more commonly referred to as attention deficit disorder or ADHD. And he founded DIG Coaching Practice, and he's the host of Attention Talk Radio, which many of you may have heard, and Attention Talk Video. And Jeff coaches students, individuals, and entrepreneurs even with ADHD, or ADHD symptoms, he uses that verbiage specifically, who are seeking to improve their personal results or business results. So howdy, Jeff.
Hey, Seth, thank you so much for bringing me on this opportunity. And thank you for everything you do for the community.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. Did I leave anything out of your introduction that you want parents to know as we're getting started here?
Not really. I mean, they're here for the content and stuff like that. They can learn more by going to the little bio page and clicking on my website. So let's not spend too much time on me. Let's just get into the content.
Cool. So what is the content? What are we going to learn today?
Well, I want to talk to everybody about working memory. I want to explain kind of what it is and how I think it's the elephant in the room. Oftentimes that's really not addressed specifically. A lot of people look at focus issues, but a lot of times I believe even more than half the time it's a working memory issue. So I want to illuminate really what it is. And I'd like to just have a conversation with you about how it manifests and really try to help parents and even those students that are listening to kind of learn how to problem solve a little bit, because we will talk about a few times in this session about how one structure might work for one person, but not another. We'll actually get to the root of things and kind of explain that out. So hopefully it'd be a lively conversation. I'd like to engage you and just kind of go back and forth, because I like parents to really understand what this is so that they can actually begin to manage ADHD like never before.
And how, when you're working with students, how do you help students specifically?
Well, most of the time I'm truly trying to help teachers and parents and sometimes significant others really kind of understand what's going on. Because there's a quote that I really love, and that is, the sun does not rotate around the earth, but without the right technology, it looks like it does. And so what I like to do is illuminate the things that are underneath that aren't what they appear, that have a real big impact. And if I'm dealing with a kid that's 12, 13, they're just really not going to understand these concepts. But if I'm dealing with a parent, and we'll talk about some situations why, you know, working on one computer screen can be really taxing to somebody with ADHD, or the value of printing things off and highlighting them as opposed to using some screens. And so just the realization of that, so that they can really kind of help set students up with success. So as they mature, they can begin to understand the role working memory plays, and then kind of learn how to manage it and advocate for themselves.
All right. And then why does this work matter to you? Why did you choose this? How'd you get into this? Why do you care about this stuff?
I was coming through school, I was dyslexic and learning disability. And when I was going through, all the people that were helping me, they were just dealing with the symptomatic stuff. And I got to tell you, it frustrated me. It frustrated them. When I got into college, I just had to figure out how I did it myself. And over those periods of time, I got through school, I got my MBA, and I was successful because I did it my way. And I began to pay attention to stuff. And I really started looking around at other people that were really struggling with the normative ways you're supposed to do that, or the normative ADHD ways that you're supposed to do things. And so many people do it outside of that norm. I got a passion for it. My work is really more of a calling than it is a job. And there's nothing more gratifying than working with a student or even an adult where they, oh my God, I can do it this way. So, I mean, I know you do what you do because of your passion for it. Same thing. So and I enjoy my work. It's a lot of fun.
Cool. And then how do you, I usually ask right at this point, before we get into the bulk of the session, I ask, how do you define executive function? But in this case, since your world is, the words that are used in your world are much more, and for your audience, and I know you probably have specific ways you ask and phrase things very particularly. Why would you say ADD instead of ADHD and stuff like that? But for the purposes of the parents watching, you're in the ADHD world, I'm in the executive function world. What's the difference or the similarities, or what does your mind do with those terms?
Well, first of all, executive function is a little bit of a challenge because there's so many people using so many different definitions of it. In my world, I really latch on to Dr. Barclay's model. And he focuses really, self-regulation is agreed upon as being one of the major executive functions. And so a lot of my work is dealing with that. And self-regulation is the ability to pause and direct an action back on yourself to change your behavior, to change your future. It's very much a future-directed act. And so in my world, I deal a lot with people with ADHD to get them to pause and think about what they're doing, kind of engage the thinking brain to override that automatic brain to kind of move forward. And working memory is another executive function. And we're going to illustrate that with some attention exercises to really understand that a bit. And while I focus a little bit more on the ADHD world, a lot of the concepts are really applicable to anybody outside of that, particularly the working memory. That's a little bit more of a ubiquitous thing, whether you're dyslexic, a learning disability, ADHD, sometimes autism, stuff like that. So our topic tonight, while I work a lot with the ADHD crowd, our topic tonight applies to them, but also applies pretty much to everybody who's struggling.
Awesome. Thank you for clarifying that. And so as we now get into sort of the meat of the session, what I want to start with is the A to the B. So you, Jeff, have a student or somebody you know, but hopefully, you know, speaking about students, and you see the student there at point A, and the parent comes to you, or a friend of yours with a child who's struggling comes to you, or a client, whoever, and they're at point A, and they're really struggling, stuck. There's some serious concerns. The parent or the teacher wants to get them to point B, where we've turned a corner. It's not perfect, but we've turned a corner. What's A look like? Like, what are some of the problems you hear over and over and over and over? And what's B look like when the problems are really on a way better path?
So let me just say, between A and B is how you do it.
Right.
And that is a mental process that goes on inside some people's head. And point A looks like the person's struggling, they're not able to accomplish something. Point B is they're actually able to accomplish something. This stuff in the middle is the part that frustrates me, because so many people harp on the outcome, but they don't really show people how to get from A to B. It's expected the person's supposed to figure that out in their head. And what I'd like to illuminate today is that's not so easy, because in order to do that, a lot of times you're using working memory in order to get from A to B. I'll picture it, and actually that mental step-by-step process to get you kind of through that. And so a lot of times people will get to B by accident. They'll just stumble into it for whatever reason. But how people get from A to B is as individual as that person. And so again, today I'm gonna wanna talk about a working memory, and we'll talk about it. We're gonna talk about how it manifests in the world and how to translate when there's a working memory issue, and talk about what it is and how we can make some adjustments so that person can get from A to B. Not just focusing on the B, but the process of what it would enable them to get from A to B, if that makes any sense. Or the why sometimes things work and not to, so they can begin to explain that. Hopefully that makes a little sense. When we get into things, I think it'll make it a little bit more tangible as we kind of walk through it. But the idea is, as I describe, people come to me all the time wanting to achieve a goal. It's easy to say, I want to run a marathon. And it's easy to plan, I'm going to run every day to run the marathon. The issue is, how do you get out the door every day when it's hot to run the stuff that you were meant to do today? And that's one of the things that we kind of hopefully illuminate and talk about.
Cool. Yeah, let's go ahead and dive in. So where do you want to dive in? Do you want to dive in on understanding the executive function role with working memory?
What I'd like to do is actually define working memory. And then I'd like to do an exercise with you and see if we can learn something. So first of all, forgive me for reading this, but I want to get the wording right. Working memory is the ability to hold thoughts in your mind while organizing and sequencing them without forgetting what they are. Again, I'm going to repeat that. Working memory is the ability to hold thoughts in your mind while organizing and sequencing them without forgetting what they are. So those are words on a page. In order to understand this stuff, what I'd like to do is an exercise. And those that are watching this right now, I'm going to talk to Seth, but I want you to imagine I'm going to talk to you, and I'd like you to do this exercise, because the more you do this, the more of you that do this, the better opportunity you'll have to understand this. And Seth, in a minute, I'm going to say five words very slowly. Please don't write them down. And if you feel the urge to repeat them back to me, please don't. Just be silent. After I repeat the words, and when you're ready, I'd like you to repeat them back to me in alphabetical order. Make sense?
Yes.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Teacher, zebra, kangaroo, bumblebee, hippopotamus.
Bumblebee, hippopotamus, kangaroo, teacher, zebra.
Excellent. You got them all right. I don't care if out there if you got them all right or all wrong. That's not really the point. But did you see the time it took you to kind of process that in your mind?
I didn't even know if I remembered what the five things were.
Exactly. Yeah. Now realize you didn't learn anything new. You knew what all five words were. If you wanted to, I mean, if you could, you could visualize them. And you know what the alphabetical order is. What you had to do was you had to listen to them. You had to pay attention to them somehow and reorder the list without forgetting them to repeat them. That's the process. Now, how people remember them is interesting. I've had people say, I could remember because I could hear your voice echoing in my head. One woman said, I had a teacher with a bumblebee flying around their head, a hippopotamus, kangaroo, and a zebra, and the whatever. One woman told me that she remembered them based off the smell. But how you remember them is individual, but the process that I just described is ubiquitous, and that is what working memory is, in part. It's the ability to hold things in your mind and juggle them, if you will, without forgetting them. And for the parents that are looking, you might have like walked into a room one time and forgot why you're in the room because you went there, but your mind's processing it, thinking about some other things, and it crowds out that memory. When you get in there, you forgot what you're doing. This is a big deal because if working memory is challenging to somebody and it's hard, it's a lot of work, and it's like if it's 120 degrees outside, you know, who wants to go garden when there's air conditioning inside? So in my crowd by ADD World, it looks like a focus issue. Sometimes, as I describe, it's not always a focus issue. Sometimes it's a working memory challenge because they can't hold that in their mind. They get frustrated and then they just want to escape it. If we can make it easier on the working memory, then sometimes they won't necessarily escape it. So recognize at the beginning, I said, when I said the words, I asked you, please don't write them down, because if you did, that would relieve you of the burden and you could put them on index cards and you could get them right each time. I also asked you not to repeat the word if you felt the urge to. And the reason for that is by publicly stating it, it actually makes it easy to remember. And I remember learning this from Dr. Russell Barkley in a couple of his presentations like 10 years ago. Play is very important for children. Also, it's really important for any animal. You might watch like Animal Planet or something and you have two little like tiger cubs like playing with each other, really not playing. They're actually learning to hunt, to sequence and stalk prey in order to eat. It looks like play because they're kind of clowning around. Well, it's important for kids to play. So it's not all the time, but it's normal if you have a three-year-old that's playing by themselves, maybe blocks on the floor. And as they're playing, they're actually talking out loud to themselves. They're having a public conversation about what they're building. They're not talking to you or me. They're talking to themselves, only we can eavesdrop on them. Somewhere between age 3 and 5, that public conversation that they have moves into their brain. It's called self-talk. It's still happening, but we can't hear it anymore. And the reason why I ask you not to repeat the words is because many people who struggle with working memory, it's not to talk is not to think. So if they verbalize it out externally, it's like thinking to them. And that's the reason I asked you not to say the words after I repeated them, because it would actually make it easier for some to do that. Now, when we get into working memory, there's two pieces of it. There's verbal working memory, which is the talking to yourself, and there's visual imagery, the ability to see the picture, construct that picture in your mind. And again, we go back to people who have executive functioning challenges, have difficulty with creating that picture in their mind, that movie, if you will. It's very, very taxing, and when it's really, really hard, that's often when they escape and go do something else. So in my crowd, the crowd with ADHD, we do a lot of, often for many of them, not to talk is not to think. You want them to talk out loud, to think out loud, and we want to externalize things so that they can begin to see them because they have a hard time holding that. Now, I gave you 5 words. Imagine if I gave you 10. It'd be a lot more difficult, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I'm imagining how it feels for a student where there's a million things thrown at them in a day.
Yep, exactly. It gets overwhelmed. Or if I give you 5 complicated concepts, it can be really, really difficult. So this underlying issue, let's talk about some ways that it manifests.
Can I interrupt you and mirror back to what I've heard so far and see if we're on the same page? So you're saying working memory often gets misunderstood with focus, attention, and concentration. Working memory is a huge problem. If we understand that, we can better help these kids. And working memory has to do with how we hold things in our mind for a period of time while we're trying to work on a problem. Yep. And for kids who struggle with working memory, if we don't address this and we assume that if they just try harder, everything will be okay, we're missing the point and we're really doing them a disservice. And if we do address it, we can really help them.
Spot on. So let's just talk about a little bit. I'm in my 50s. When I went to school, we had a textbook and we had notes. And in fact, we would highlight them. Like I highlighted some, because I print everything off. If I've got a book and I've got, so here's another page. I can put these two things next to each other. And if I'm reading something that's highlighted over here, I can reference and my eyes can dart from one to another. So I read it. My eyes can dart, can hold that. What I was reading in my mind is looked over here, which by the way, Seth, when I gave you those five words, adults with ADHD, half the time they forget a word or they get the order wrong, just as an aside. So in this moment, when I see it, I can read something that's highlighted and I have an indicator, so my eyes can dart. So there's no instruction. So it's easy for me to relate those two things together. Well, let me do this way. It's easier because I struggled with that when I was going through. And our world today, because of technology, it's convenient for teachers and everybody to put things online. So imagine, if you will, you have a child or a kid, maybe in middle school, that's reading some online text. Well, with a Surface and an iPad now, with an iPencil, you can kind of start to annotate. But till recently, you really kind of couldn't. So you'd have to read this thing, and then you got to click. Either it's a Word document or a PowerPoint or a website or whatever. And then you got to go, and then you've got to scroll looking. You have to remember what you read, and you're scrolling. Look, all this instructions of thinking about how you go find it. By the time you find what you're looking for, often you have forgotten what you originally read because you're holding that in your mind. And the problem with that is that when they do that, if you've got a challenge of working memory, you go through all that work. When you get to the end, you're frustrated because now you got to do it all over again. That's taxing your working memory. And again, in my world, people with ADHD, they're not going to do that. So they look like they have a focus issue because they run off. But actually, what's at the core is working memory. Now, corporate America is starting to solve this because a lot of times at work, you walk in, people have three computer screens and they're big. They pull things up and we're back to their eyes darting back and forth. But for students with iPads and little laptops
or phones,
the school system is really well intended, but nobody's advocating for this crowd. And that's not a tip, a trick, or strategy. It's you got to have the right tools. And so I did an interview with Dr. Russell Barkley on Attention Talk Radio years ago. It was funny because we were talking about many of the things we're talking about now. And we got to the end and realized that paper often is high tech for people with ADHD because you can print it all off and you can see it all on the table. It's less taxing to your working memory. I'm also going to tell you another small story is my youngest son, who does not have ADHD, was in high school and he was having to do a book report and really struggling in school. And he had an online textbook where you click and you click and click. Again, you can't annotate it. He's reading it. It's too laborious to do notes. And literally one day, he was having a hard time. I got involved and I went through the Spark Notes and cut and pasted it all together in a Word document. It took me 35 minutes to do it. I printed it off in a Word document and I had him read it and highlight what he was reading. Then I had him study for the test. Got 20 points better on the exam. And for less time, all because that technology was taxed as working memory. And so, you know, you're passionate about what I do, and I'm passionate about what I'm doing. But at the end of the day, it is, I don't mean this negatively, but it's convenient for society if we do it their way. And it's convenient for teachers and administrators to do this stuff online. But these kids with working memory challenges, they're getting bullied just to try harder. And they're given the tools that are making it worse. The very people that are trying to help them, and they're well-intended, don't get me wrong, and forgive my voice, I get excited, but they're actually making it worse on these people. And what I'm hoping today is I can help illuminate this for some of the parents out there so they can advocate for their kids. Because when you're going through school, there's two sides. One is the education. If you get through school and you don't have the education, you're going to flounder. The other side is you got to be able to deal with the world as it is. If we deal with just dealing with the world as it is, we get to the end and we don't even have the knowledge to deal with it. So there's this this equilibrium. So I'm hoping I can help parents advocate for themselves to help the kids get the knowledge and then learn to adapt. I mean, I have a high-speed printer. In my world, I print everything all the time because it's so much easier for me just for working memory challenges. So I'm going to stop here, kind of get your thoughts on this to see if this is making some sense.
That's fantastic. And you're kind of blowing my mind. And I don't say that very often, but just the dots that are being connected is that everything that you're saying is so infiltrated into everything that I do. So one of the biggest problems that we see, Jeff, that we're seeing right now, and I'm going to refer back to the word bullying that you used. And let me start with that. When you asked me the five things, I felt pressure in my body. I felt a constriction. I felt stress. And I didn't like it. I felt put on the spot. But I'm also very alert. I'm starting an interview. I'm wide awake. I made sure to get a good night's sleep last night because I knew I was going to be doing this with you today. I have to be spot on. So my brain's on. So I'm in a good place to do it. But even though I'm in a good place to do it, I felt the pressure of that. So that's almost like the bullying. Again, you did not intend for me to feel that. But I couldn't write it down. I couldn't move my lips. I couldn't speak it out loud. I depended on visualization. I actually felt like I was cheating because I made images of the things and that's how I reordered them. But it took me a while to see the images, see the first letter, So what's happening with these kids, one of the biggest problems is that the teachers have, they might be using Schoology, Google Classroom, Infinite Campus. They have their own personal website. Middle or high schooler has 7 or 8 teachers sometimes, and they have to go to all these different places on a screen in order to find out what they need to do. It's so much work just to figure out what they have to do for homework. It's so much time. It took you 30 or 35 minutes to do that paper with your child, to get the notes for your child. Yep. It takes these kids, it takes me, and I'm familiar with their portals, 15, 20 minutes just to figure out what the heck to do. So it's not just a matter of this kid doesn't care or isn't trying hard enough or is lazy. Like, they can't do all these things. And as I'm speaking with you, so the audience knows, I can't juggle all this stuff. I don't have that good of working memory. I may have done fine on that test being put on the spot, but I can turn it up for a moment, but for me to do that the whole day would be exhausting. Yep. I have Jeff's image about this big, and underneath Jeff's image, before he and I started, I was fiddling around. He may have thought, if he was somebody who was judgmental about that sort of stuff and critical about that stuff, he may have thought, what is Seth screwing around with? Well, I was making an accommodation for myself and putting my interview notes below his image so I can see both at the same time. Like, what you said, Jeff, is we're not empowering them to have these hacks and tricks and things that will make their life easier. So the more, and there are so many to do, we don't have the time to go into them, but the fact that you're illustrating the problem so clearly, I think will give parents the ability to say, here's a problem, how does working memory fit into it, and how can we help our kid get an accommodation so that they can be getting the knowledge that you said in school, and they can be getting the second, I forget the word you said for the second thing, but I'm going to say the executive function to be able to do stuff. Is that correct?
Yep. Yeah. And so, oddly enough, sometimes the accommodation is actually be able to print stuff in school these days. It's crazy to me, but like, you to get access to the printer, which again, we get with Xerox when I was a kid all the time. So we're starting to understand that, and just, I'm looking at the time. Time is flying right now. We're not going to be able to get to all of it, but I'm hoping I can give parents a sense of this. Another thing that I want to talk about is recall. The back part of your brain is like a filing cabinet, and the front part of your brain is like a random access memory on a computer, okay? When you're trying, or actually, this is actually the executive function of working memory. This is the filing cabinet. When I'm asking an adult with ADHD, like, they got to pack for a weekend, they're not learning anything new. They got to retrieve knowledge from the back of their head and bring it to the front of their head. And when you do that, there's something I call is free recall. If I were to say, Steve, who's on a $20 bill, to name that president out of thin air, that would be what I call free recall. If I showed you a $20 bill, it's called what I call cued recall. So it pulls that out of the back of your mind a lot easier. And a lot of people with ADHD, when they're going to pack, and I use packing, is in order to think of what to take, they've got to run a visual movie in their mind to go through at, if they're there and they have cues as they begin to see that, oh yeah, I got to take a toothbrush and it's fine. I need to take a tuxedo. And so as they run that movie, that's cued recall for them to remember what's kind of going on. Well, when you're dealing with kids, out of sight, out of mind, because for some people with ADHD is they literally leave reminders out, which is cues. Like if I've got to take my homework, like if I need to take something to the office, I might put it with my keys. That reminds me, it's cued recall in order for me to go, as opposed to relying on my real memory. And that's free recall to go. And when we're talking with kids right now in the digital world, and we want them to remember everything, to your point, if you've got like a middle school kid with an online textbook and PowerPoint and links, it's all over the place. Whereas when I was in school, you had books and you could see, well, that's a thick book and that's a thin book and this is a really small book. And sometimes you could get a sense of what work was involved by there. But when you have a link, you can't determine if that link is an hour-long movie and 2 hours of work or if it's something you can kind of pass by. You've got to get into it and kind of visualize it. And this is really hard for me to kind of help everybody see, but there's a lot of kids that when I say, what is the context? What's the text of your work? It's all digital and they can't create that picture in their mind. And when you're a kid, you discount, well, that's like nothing. Of course, the night before you dig into it, it's a lot better. And it's for my college students that I coach, a lot of times we get the syllabus and we print everything out and we put it in binders and chronological so they can see it, touch it. It becomes tangible to them. And again, a lot of times at our schools, we're using technology, but we're putting stuff on Google Docs and iDrive and blah, blah, blah. And these kids can't conceptualize it. Whereas if we go back to the old days where you print it and you physically see it, there's a lot of clues that you get from those visuals. So again, I want to stop and have you come in on that. But this recall thing is you have your kid, they go to school, but they forget to turn the homework in because there's no visual cue to remind them to do that. You stick it somewhere, it's out of sight, out of mind. Or, you know, the room's a mess because sometimes a lot of it's reminders of everything that they've got to leave out. But some point in time, you get too many reminders, it gets overwhelming. So again, let me kind of give you an opportunity to comment.
Well, before I comment, I think this is a perfect time to mention the word ambiguity. You had mentioned how important that is. And I think that what I'm hearing and what you're saying right now is part of the problem with the ambiguity is what you just said. Can you tie that in real quick?
So first of all, I'm going to say, I don't know anybody out there other than myself that's saying this. So when you go on the internet, you're going to look, and I'm not saying that I'm right, but this is my philosophy. I have found in my work that 75-80% of procrastination is rooted in ambiguity. And ambiguity can take two forms. One, you truly don't know what to do. The second one is it's ambiguous because there's too much information and you can't hold it all in your mind in that visual imagery. So Seth, if I gave you 10 or 15, you said you could visualize those words that I gave you, but if at some point in time, if they were 15 or 20 and they were all have to be connected, it's ambiguous on how they're connected because you can't hold that whole picture in your mind. It matters little in this situation because if something's ambiguous and you can't hold it in working memory, it looks like it's ambiguous. Now you have what everybody says is a focus problem. You escape and you do something else because it's just too hard. And so when we get into working with kids, a lot of times it's about removing the ambiguity and letting them see it. So I'm going to share one more thing. I was a high adventure scout master for many years with my older son. And the scouts taught me edge, educate, demonstrate, guide, and empower. So I would get up there and say, you know, a square knot's a great knot because it doesn't slip. And for that, we use it in first aid. That's the education piece. Then I grab the rope and I show them, I demonstrate. They can see it. Adults, go look up a bowline knot on the internet and read the instructions, have somebody read them to you and try to tie it because you've got to take those words and you've got to create a mental picture to put it together. I think most of you will struggle. But when I demonstrate it, they can see it. Then I give them the rope. I say, now let you do it. And they're fumbling all over the place and I'm guiding them. And then when they get it, I give them the rope and let them go practice. The reason I'm saying this visual demonstration that I'm doing is helping them remove the ambiguity and begin to see what's going on. And I find more and more in our school today, they explain it. And then the kids have got to go out and extrapolate words and stuff from the page to see it. And I can't prove this, but my sense is, you know, 100 years ago when we had apprentices, it was great for ADHD because you got to see it demonstrated over and over and over and you got to learn some things. So I'm going to pause again and let you kind of thought, but that edge concept is great because you demonstrate, people see it, reduces the ambiguity, and the person with ADHD or other executive functioning, they don't have to rely on their working memory to visualize it. They can see it and run the picture.
Yeah, I think the ambiguity, again, for parents watching this, it touches so many areas. So when you were speaking about the ambiguity, my mind is going to what I'm coaching on a lot. You know, I'm seeing kids with missing work incompletes, late work, zeros. They didn't study for the test. But it's I use the words abstract and concrete. And what I talk about is that what we often do is it's too abstract for these kids. And it is stressful. It is pressure. And so when you say, go do your homework tonight, you got to go do your homework. It's abstract because like you said, they don't know how long it's going to take, how many pages, how many problems, it's very abstract. And in order to reduce that stress and get them so that they can execute and take action, it has to become concrete. Well, we haven't empowered them with how you make it concrete. And so what I do, and this is analog too, you know, we have the digital calendars. Some of my kids use those, but I insist that they use analog for their, what I call the daily plan. You have to have a little scrap paper. I make a personalized daily plan or whatever, but like that tactile thing, get it out of your head. And I tell kids, this is the worst place to depend on this stuff, but they don't know that. They're not taught that, but depending on this to remember all these details, why? Like make your life easier. Use the hacks yourself. So, and then in terms of the abstract and concrete, abstract is stressful. Concrete is at least less stressful and you can start taking action. I talk about chunking. I think you talk about this as well, but I talk about you can chunk by time or task. And so to get it concrete, we have to figure out what the heck do you have to do. And then you have to, it has to be in a chunk. You know, how do you eat an elephant, a bite at a time? The kid has to perceive it as a small enough chunk that they can manage it. Otherwise, it's too stressful and they're going to do what you said with procrastination. They will not stop. It's too abstract. It's too emotionally overwhelming to contemplate where to even start. And then we have avoidance, resistance, procrastination, something that looks like a lack of motivation. While they do have motivation, just not to do something that's abstract and what you said, ambiguous, it's confusing.
Yep. So I want to pause here for a second. Seth and I do this all the time, and I'm starting to get a sense, maybe some of the parents out there are starting to get a little overwhelmed because we're putting a lot of complicated concepts on the table. And what we're doing is we're coming backwards. When I gave you those five words, I read the definition of what working memory is. And if you roll the tape back, I think now you're starting to understand really what it is that you couldn't extrapolate to see from the words. And as we're doing this, if you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed, study this a little bit more because now you're relying on all your working memory to put all this stuff together. So I'm going to blow your mind a little bit, but I am going to talk about something to go back to the A to B. Remember I said working memory is part self-talk and part visual imagery.
Yes.
And when I said, please don't repeat the words after I say it, could make it easy. Many, many students need to talk out loud to think. So as a parent, we say, go do your homework. Well, often it's better for them to usually say, teach this to me. Because while they're teaching it, they're going to figure it out. And I literally have had college students. So I said, go hire the tutor and teach it to the tutor. The reason I'm doing that is they're going to talk out loud with it. That's going to make it easier on their self-talk because they're going to externalize it. And it's funny because the tutor's going to look at them. They're going to get nonverbal communication from the tutor. Like when the tutor goes like this, they're going to know that they're a little bit off track and they'll make some adjustments. And so it sounds kind of counterintuitive. I've actually flipped it around to say, getting from A to B sometimes is like you're having a hard time. Sometimes they need to talk out loud because they need to think out loud because it's less taxing on their working memory. That's how they get to 1 to 2. But as a parent, we all think, hey, just go off to your room and go figure this thing out. And a lot of times either they don't have – it's ambiguous. They don't have the concept. They actually need you to go talk out loud or they don't have it all put together. So we have good intentions, but we're not giving them the tools. These all come back to fundamental working memory, which is why I'm so grateful, Seth, that you had us on, because I don't think people talk about it in these terms. So saying, teach this to me, or demonstrate to them are not typical things that we're going to see out on the internet. And it does require a little bit of energy and effort, but I think that you'll have better results with it. So again, I want to kind of pause and let you comment on that.
No, I teach my students the number one way to learn anything is to teach somebody else. And one of the worst ways to learn something is lecture. And that tends to be what schools do. And I also will say, even in the summit, the things as people are watching this, one of the things that I gave them is, well, there are a couple of things that I guess I did to help them with their working memory, is I made a sheet for them where they can jot down concept or knowledge and actions, because I want parents to be able to bullet knowledge as you and I are talking. Yep. They can research more later let it sink later. And then action, what action do they want to take? So one, I gave them a sheet that they can print. Two, I made it on Vimeo so they can speed it up or slow it down. You and I are both very fast talkers. They can slow down the video and watch it at a slower speed if they want. They can also rewatch it. And three, I forget what the third one was. My working memory didn't remember the third thing that I did to help make it easier. But yeah, so we're
should have written it down because you wouldn't have to rely on your working memory, right? So,
right,
but only three things. Yeah. So I tell you, from a time perspective, do you have, again, there's a lot more to this, and we can't get into all of it, but there's one other concept that I think I would like to throw out there with that will take a couple minutes. Are you good with that?
Yeah, I think I want to explain the one thing. When I said that teaching it is the best way to learn it, one of the easiest hacks parents can use is your child testing you. I will often have my students test me on what they're learning. But the other super easy hack is study groups. A kid having their friend over and studying together. You don't have to call it you're teaching, just having them learn to have fun and study with another person is one of the best things they can do to really learn the thing.
Yeah. Let me talk about this. You're talking about study groups. Technically, underneath it all, here's why I think they work. Is basically when you're going through some material, number one, you're talking out loud with everybody. Some person that's with ADHD or other executive functioning challenges, they're relieving their working memory by talking, they're hearing about it. And when you hit that moment of ambiguity, like you don't really know what's going to do, my ADHD crowd, it's like a blank sheet of paper. And they don't have the patience. So within seconds, nothing is happening and they get up, go to the bathroom, and they're done. That's a self-regulation issue because they hit that wall of ambiguity. But if you've got somebody next to you, I might go, huh, Seth, what's this? And you might say something that will solve the problem, or you might say something that will trigger it. Then I resolve it and I'm back on track. So to me, it's kind of a baked in structure because you've got somebody, when you hit that ambiguity, kind of help you go through it quickly as opposed to going to research to find it. So some people call it accountability. I see it as you've got somebody to help you in those moments of ambiguity when you're externalizing, which makes it easier for you to focus on it. So it doesn't look like a self-regulation issue. In the absence of it, you hit that wall where your working memory's taxed, and now you have a self-regulation issue because it's too hard. Appearance-wise, it looks like there's a focus issue. But tactically, I think you're solving for the working memory problem. People stick to it a little bit longer. So I just wanted to highlight the reason why I think that works goes back to what we're talking about.
Can I ask you this too? Because you said it several times, and I think it might be valuable for parents to hear you unpack this. But you use the word working memory is taxed. What things do kids often experience that taxes it? And what do we need to know about that?
So this is, I'll never forget. I came home one day. I walked into the house and I had something going on. At the time, my ex-wife and my two kids were like stuff was going on. They needed me. And I'm trying to remember what I came in the house to do. And each one of them is hitting me. And I'm like, stop. I can't handle this. Let me sit down and write down what I've got going on that I came into the house so that I can come back. Because I'm going to forget that when I deal with everybody else. And then, okay, now what's your issue? Let me solve your issue. Now that's done. So if I try to do all of them at one time, that's just too much that's going on inside of my head. But I caught myself and I paused and said, stop, give me a second. Let me get out of my head what I need to so I can remember like buzzwords to jog back. Now you, okay, great. Now you, and then you. That's me technically. Now a kid that's 12, 13 years old, they don't have the self-awareness to know that all the time. And that's why as parents, we need to be kind of careful about what we do and managing some of that stuff. It's, by the way, some people with ADHD need the visual reminders to remember to do things. For other with ADHD, if they have reminders out, that's visual clutter and that paralyzes them. So and this is what I want to get back to. I'm about parents problem solving. What would work for one kid from a working memory perspective could be the worst thing for somebody else. And that really depends on your kid. It's really funny because I talk to people with ADHD and say, tell me about your workspace. It's a mess. I go, it's really not a mess. Like, usually, like, personal stuff's on one side, business, there's a little bit of a sense to it. But if you find the ones that are, that have to be clean, that they're the ones that are struggling. There's too much around them. It's a burden. They can't think until it's absolutely clean. It's, there's a, Dr. Ari Tuchman cracks me up when he writes, there's nothing in the room, absolutely nothing in the room, where other people with ADHD have a ton of stuff in the room. So anyway, I don't want to get off too far, but at the end of the day, this stuff can manifest differently for different people, and it really becomes a little bit of observation to see how your kids do it.
I think that's an excellent point. My methodology I call Frankenstudy, based on a guitar, Frankenstrat, by Eddie Van Halen. He built this guitar out of all these different guitars and pieces and things. But when we're teaching kids these strategies, we have to customize it and tailor it and personalize it to them. And it's not easy and it's not quick. But you, exactly what you're saying with like the visual stuff, I'm very visual, but if there's too much clutter, I cannot concentrate. But for some people, that is comforting. So when I'm teaching people how to make what I call a sacred study space, they want to know the exact way. It's like, no, for some kids, having white noise in the background might help them. For some, it has to be silent. Yep. For some, earplugs might be good. And for some, yeah, like parents will say, well, is music good or bad? It's like, well, some kids actually can study with heavy metal. Yep. Playing. And it's,
forgive me, if everybody goes to YouTube and you type in attention talk video punk rock, you'll see Dr. Roberto Olivardi wrote his Harvard doctoral dissertation with punk rock videos playing on the same screen that he's writing that stuff. He said the beat kind of helped him do it in 2 weeks. That works for him, not for others. But I want to say something real quickly, Seth. Parents are probably a little bit overwhelmed by this. Like, why did I find that? Here's how it works. I'm not saying it's easy, but you observe your children or your kids when they're successful. By nature, humans are going to go to the most efficient thing. And if you take a look at the times that your kids are successful and you go back and you take a look, those have the clues of the successes that will work. We have a tendency to want to say, you should go do X. I'm like, no. I want to know when you're successful, because all I need, all the clues or the answer are when you're successful, not when you're struggling. So in terms of this observation that Seth's taking care of, as you do, sometimes you just have to watch your kids' workspace, watch their behavior and their habits. It doesn't look like the way you think it is, but it's there if you pay attention to it. And I realize you're not schooled in that, but all of my success has been just watching, oh, well, you missed this appointment, but how'd you make this one? Because that was just got the clues.
Excellent. I think we've really covered most of the things that you had intended to at first. Is there any essential concepts or models of vocabulary that you feel like you left out?
Yeah, there's one. For brevity, I'm going to go. Normally what I do is I talk about when you sit down and you need to do something that requires a lot of executive functioning, there's this booting up process. Like, we turn our computer on, we boot it up. It takes a while for the operating system to come around and all the apps to be ready. The same thing happens when you sit down to do something executive function. I talk about, there's a story that I normally tell about how I turn my computer on, it boots up, I start doing some work, the electricity goes off, and I have to start over and over and over. And in 20 minutes, I've only got 3 sentences. And a lot of times people with ADHD, in the adult world, you're here, I have a hard time with transitions, or I have a hard time getting started. This is exactly that booting up process. You're going from zero, which is A, to where everything's loaded in your mind and you're able to process that. And by the way, there's nothing exciting about that time. It's a lot of hard work. And so the issue really is with the kids, how do you help them boot up their mind? Now, as an adult, talking out loud, I've got this to do, that to do, that, I begin to talk it about, like, what I've got to do, that's actually getting me familiar with these terms when you put it together. If you're an adult and you're away on a vacation, you come back into the office and you can't remember what your job is, this is the boot. You spend like a half a day reading everything to get loaded in your mind. This booting up process is huge, because the issue really is when you boot up your mind about what you've got to work, and if somebody distracts you and you've got to go off, literally it evaporates. And when you come back, you have to start all over again. So you imagine, if you will, you've got your 13-year-old at their desk doing some work, and they're really involved in a project or paper. You go, hey, it's time for dinner. It took them a miracle to get to where they are, and you're asking them to stop. And literally when they walk away, they're going to forget it all, and they're going to have to start all over from the beginning. What happens is, they don't consciously do this, but if they have to keep starting over from scratch, they get agitated, so they never begin it. They never get started because they never have enough room. And so a lot of times adults don't walk in and say, hey, let me know when you're getting to a stopping point, because we need to let them finish it. And again, this is a little bit more complicated concept, but a lot of times we've got them scheduled and they don't have enough time to do these tasks. And then they get frustrated. We have looks like a focus issue because they're not, again, once they get into this task and they've got their mind booted up, they've got to finish it, because if they don't, they have to start over again. They're not going to do it. They're going to resist it. They're going to fight it. These are working memory issues, not focused issues. And what I'm hoping, Seth, is that we've given some concepts for adults to begin to problem solve and look around, because having this mindset that working memory is at the core and problem solving for this to make it less taxing, to easier, like multiple screens or printing the things off or having them talk out loud to you. Now we're actually problem solving and they can get to the task to get to your point. That's what's going to get us the beat, is helping them make it easier for their working memory so they process it. So does that make some sense, or did I go too fast?
No, and I'm so glad you brought that up too. And as you were talking, I got so frustrated because I thought about one of the things that we do in our traditional schooling is they're in class for 45 minutes, the bell rings, they go have 5 minutes to get to another class, they have to shift, and then they have another class, they have to shift. And for me, it takes me 20 to 30 minutes to get into what I call a flow. It takes me 20 to 30 minutes to even get started in a workflow. And I try to do workflows in about 3 to 4 hour blocks, because I don't go, if I tell you, hey, Jeff, I'm going to do such and such, it's going to take me an hour. That is complete BS, because it does not take me an hour. It takes me a while just to even get started. And if I think I'm going to do an hour, by the time that hour is over, nothing's even gotten done. And for me, I have to clean my area in order to focus. I have to write a plan. I have to look through my notes. And I do this every day of my life. So just getting to even starting point, I have to sort of pre-start. And that's so important for our kids, because we just expect them to sit down and do it.
And yes. So if I may, I'm confident there's a few of you out there, parents, that will sit down every day and you'll begin to write out your day and what you're doing, and you never refer to it. You go through this process. That's your booting up process. Now, you're an adult, maybe you have a cup of coffee, you sit down and you do this stuff. But when you do that in the morning and you never look for it, you're booting up your mind for that day. You're loading it in so that you can kind of go through that stuff. And by the way, you're never going to go back to it unless it's rare. Kids don't know this. And they're not going to sit down with a cup of coffee and do this. So sometimes it's as much as a parent saying, tell me about your day. What do you got going to school today? And of course, everybody, I'm not holier than thou. I've had teenagers and I've done it all wrong. So don't think that I've got this thing together, because I've messed it all up. Because those kids don't want to talk to me, but I got to be clever in asking the questions. Like, what fun stuff do you have today? What are you looking forward to? Mix it up. But by asking those questions, you're helping them boot up their mind and understand their day. And I didn't mean to interrupt yourself, but I thought adults could really understand this. And this is a big issue, particularly around projects. Seth, in my business, Friday it's my project day. Anything creative, I got that day, because I need uninterrupted time so that when I get into it, I don't have to stop until it's completely done. I schedule that. You've got kids, class after class after class, after school activity, da, 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 and then a paper comes, they can never get to it. As a parent, we got to help advocate and get those blocks of times where they've got the time, they've got the resources to talk out loud so they can get through that ambiguity. We need to print it out. We need to give them the screens so they're not having to work so hard to get that knowledge so that they can perform out in the world.
Awesome. I was listening to you and I had something else to share on that, but it went away
because
I
was paying attention.
I actually do remember this is a really good one for parents in this case. So it is ambiguous. They often don't know what they have to do. So, and then what we often do is say, what do you have for homework? And we expect a response. So what Jeff is saying, you got to prime the pump and really get creative and be patient and try a lot of different things to even get there. So, but once we find out that they have something, they often don't know where to even start. So a question that you parents can write down right now that I use a lot that's very effective is, let's say a kid says, I have to write a paper for LA. Well, that's a big thing. That includes drafting, planning it, drafting it, revising, editing, publishing, turning it in. So what I say is, what is the very next thing you need to do to get started? That one question is just a really good one to help pull. And I don't want to rescue them and tell them that. We need to train them to do it so that they can do it more independently, which Jeff is saying as well.
So I have a video on YouTube that I put. It's like questions or triggers. I've coached adults before that are having a hard time packing. You got to go on a trip? Yeah. How many days? Three. What do you need to take? Well, I need anything else? Yeah. Electronics? Yeah. Anything else? Notice the vagueness of my questions. Those are cued recall. When I ask the questions, it actually helps them retrieve it. It's not free recall anymore because I'm doing it. So to your point, what's next? That is a working memory issue. When you're asking the question, you're kind of cued along. Which, by the way, if you say, what's your homework? Now you're asking for free recall. Pull out your notes from today. Take a look at it. Now tell me what it is. Now that's cued recall. A lot easier as a parent.
I actually have a really good tool for that, and I think I have it here. Yeah. So this is a paper I use with my students, but this is a great cued recall. Another question that's really helpful. I just turned blue. So the last question that I ask on this list is, yes, what am I forgetting? Amazing question. After you do all the cued recall, I say, what are you forgetting? Oh my gosh. So often they're like, oh, well, I have to do blah, blah, blah. I have to do a big giant paper or whatever. So,
yep. So, right. And for time purposes, so what I had hoped to accomplish today was to help everybody begin to see working memory in your mind with that little attention exercise, realize how difficult it is, understand its role, realizes that technology is helping on certain things, but it's making it worse in some other, and working memory is one of them. As a parent, we need to be aware of this and really begin to think about getting printers, high-speed printers, getting multiple screens, having our kids talk about it, pull those things together to interact. These are problem solving based off of your kid, but understanding that that's the underlying issue, because all too often we go out on the internet and there's a tip trick that doesn't work because we haven't really solved that underlying issue. A kid can try harder all day they want, but if they've got multiple screens up, they're having to go around, it's not going to stick because we're not getting to an underlying issue. I hope we illuminated this today. We'll help parents think and begin to problem solve and also take a look at, wow, this strategy is not working because it's not doing anything to help my kids work in memory. It doesn't solve that problem immediately, but it saves you months of frustration realizing why that doesn't work and you can move on to the next. So with that, make any sense or any other questions?
Yep. From your excellent wrap up. Three more questions and we'll be done in 5 minutes. Okay. This week, Jeff, after they've been to the summit, they've gotten immersed in this and they're completely overwhelmed. This week, when the mud settles, what's one action they can take to support their child?
Pause when it looks like they're having a focus issue and ask the question, what could be ambiguous to them or what might be taxing their working memory? Just ask those questions, like your question, what am I forgetting, right? Same thing. Ask that question to yourself and begin to look around and notice what you see. And when you say, well, this could be ambiguous, or think, how can I make it easier for them?
Excellent. Next question. Given the pandemic and all of the uncertainty this fall with families, what's one of the things that you're hearing from parents constantly right now, one of the worries that stands out in your mind, and what's your gut response to that?
Yeah, so forgive me, you're not going to, at the end of the day, when COVID hit, I had 12 CEOs call me up that were having to work from the house. And we were having to do everything, like it's so toxic to their working memory, because when you're in the office and you're interacting with people, there's a lot of stuff that's just built in. Literally, one of the best things I had is get on your Zoom call with all your direct reports so you can see everybody at their desk. You got a question, don't have a conversation with them in the email, ping them to get them off mute and you have a conversation. So I tried to simulate the office. With school, this is a not optimal learning environment. I don't know how you can make it optimum when we're missing the fundamentals. The thing that I think is, you got to be kind to your kids and be kind to yourself. This is less than ideal. We're looking for the best of all the worst possible options, and none of them are ideal, particularly for people with executive functioning problems. So realize that this will pass at some point in time. Advocate to get them into classrooms where they're interacting, because they typically thrive in that stuff. But it's just not a perfect world. It's like asking somebody who's handicapped to go run when they don't have really a wheelchair, and you just have to adjust your expectations on it. We're going to get through this somehow, but it can be very, very emotional because you love your kids. The kids are trying hard. You've got to recognize this, but we all got to come together emotionally and take care of that. Don't beat yourself up too much.
That was very well put. Yeah, thank you. And then the very last question of the whole thing, forgetting I'm even here, I'm forgetting we even just had this talk, but from your heart, right to the heart of the parent who's watching this and really is struggling and is really looking for answers, what's the most important takeaway you hope that parent leaves with right now?
When I was diagnosed in 1972 with dyslexia, I'll never forget this. My dad said it a bunch of times. He said to the doctor, what do we do? He said two things. Number one, love your kids. And number two, find out what they're interested in, throw every dime you got at it. And I say that because I was interested in athletics, and they threw a lot of, I was an internationally ranked swimmer, and I would have never gotten to college had I not done that. I got in because I was an athlete. And then I figured out along the way, I went on to get my MBA. And as a parent, you're here watching this because you care. You love your kids. They can thrive. They really can thrive. It's a lot more work for you right now. I'm not going to pretend it's easy for you. My mother, I can still hear the slurping of the coffee at 4 o'clock in the morning when I was in fourth and fifth grade. To this day, it drives me. It's like a PTSD moment, but I'm grateful because it kind of got me through. And I succeeded everything because of her. You're doing the same thing. And at the end of the day, just love your kids, focus on what they're interested in, and support the hell out of them and keep the faith. It's not easy, but there are so many success stories of people who did this, but they all start with parents like you. So that's my thought.
Jeff Copper, that was awesome. I appreciate that final thought. That was great. All right, parents, we'll go out there, take some action. There's plenty of information on Jeff. Check out ADHD Talk Radio, and you can see his links below. But I'm really glad you're here, parents, and we'll see you in the next one. Take care.